Pierre, welcome to the show. My name is Kevan Davani. I'm the host of the Kevan Davani Connection Show, and I've had, so many other Bitcoiners on my show. And to be honest, I mean, if it wasn't for Gsamet, I think that's his Twitter handle, I wouldn't have stumbled upon you, to be honest with you. So, but since, you already are in talk with also with Samson Mao, whom I also we cooperate with, why don't you give us, or my listeners, viewers, just a short background about yourself? What was the inspiring moment, or what was it that inspired you to make these great reset films? What was the trigger? Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It's great to meet you, and great to, be able to present myself to everyone that's listening to that. So I, I used to be a tech consultant, so Bitcoin was working for big corporations, automating their processes, data analysis, this kind of stuff, and was going nowhere in terms of Bitcoin project. There was really no perspective possible. I kept on talking about it with my boss, saying, okay, was there this and that coming? There were some initiatives, but in fact, nothing there. It was just a kind of like carrot for the donkey, just stuff that could allow you to, do some presentations and show that you have knowledge, to the people from the company. So I quickly lost interest in that. And and after a while, I thought, okay, I mean, it's enough. Like, there's Bitcoin that I'm so passionate about that is so important for the future of our world, according to me, that staying at my job isn't going to get me closer to doing something in Bitcoin. So I just quit. It was a bit of a sudden decision, especially for my managers. I had just started a new project, and so it wasn't a good timing, but it never is a good timing. And yeah, and so it took me 3 months, kind of just learning more about Bitcoin, just thinking, what can I do? I have a bunch of different skills, I'm also a developer, so I thought maybe that's the way I could go, learn all the technicals of developing with Bitcoin and maybe add value that way. But I think that's also something that didn't work for me after leaving my job. I just didn't want to get back to coding. So I was always into filmmaking, and I thought maybe I can make a documentary myself. And so I just started working on this alone, and I realized that actually I had a pretty good story going on. And I just kept on developing the story further until I made the film The Great Reset and The Rise of Bitcoin, which was released on January 5th. So it took me about 7 months to do the whole thing. And and after release, it was just a lot of Twitter's, spamming, I call it, just reaching out to as many people as possible so they could share this. And then we reached last month over 1 million views in total. So really amazing success.
Congratulations. Wow.
That's amazing. Thank you. Yeah, way beyond the original objectives I had. So it's really cool, and it's great because it allowed for me to join the Bitcoin community and for Bitcoiners to get back to me, especially other filmmakers and people that just wanted to work together somehow at some point. And when I was in El Salvador, I spent a month there in March, and I met Samson Mao. And through conversation, he gave me an idea for a new film, and which is the fight for the US dollar. And the conversation that I had with Samson Mao was about how he has experienced the blocking from the US, pressure from the US in Central America when it came to adopting Bitcoin there, and all the conversations he had with the different governments there. And so that's where the conversation started going. And then eventually, we just thought, man, like, there's no documentary about this that would explain the context of the US influence in Central America in particular, but I plan on studying the entire world and putting it in context today with what's happening with Bitcoin, right? Because that's what the video that you showed at the beginning explained, is the fact that we're at a turning point. The US dollar is at risk. We're not sure if it's going to hold its status of global reserve currency. And if it doesn't, then maybe Bitcoin could be this next thing, and it's definitely scary to governments. So it's logical for them to try and block it. But what I want to be sure to explain in the film is that actually blocking Bitcoin is blocking freedom, whether it's individual freedom or the sovereignty of an entire nation, like we can see in El Salvador. And so that's that's where I'm all of this together. And trying to produce articles and videos to get people around this topic, you know, and build the right community and get the right funding for it.
This is fantastic. Pierre, you know, when you, for me, from my perspective, like making a movie, making a film, would it be documentary, even like a mixed genre of maybe even, something between play movie or documentary, whatever effect like is intended, like what is the intention behind it? Like what do you intend to do? Because I mean, I know where it's going, but my question is like, whom do you want to reach? What people have you reached outside, you know, the groups or the communities in and around Bitcoin, or let's just say freedom seeking people? Have you gotten like received any feedback like from people outside our, let's say, our circles?
Yeah, so that's the difficult thing, isn't it? Because so I knew when making my first film, I knew that by producing the right content in the right form, that Bitcoiners would share it. And so I knew I had an audience for that if I do the right marketing work behind it, right? And that was easy, let's say. Now, one thing that's kind of important is that the majority of the views that I have on YouTube, they came from the YouTube algorithm. So it wasn't even, you know, Twitter, Bitcoin Magazine, all of these that were sharing this on Twitter. It was just the YouTube algorithm and how I managed to hack it, I guess. And so for me, this is a sign of, you know, going beyond just the Bitcoin space. That's for one, because it's just people that are just interested in the topic, you know, they're just, you know, because half of the film isn't even about Bitcoin. You have to watch half of the film to even like have the word Bitcoin appear. So that's, you know, a lot of it explains the context of our economy and inflation. And this concerns anyone, whoever, even if you're not interested in Bitcoin. After that, I tried to really approach it so that anyone could understand it. So not just for Bitcoiners, you know, to just kind of orange pill at scale. That's what I was always saying. And but at the same time, you know, I was making a film. It was the first time I was making a film. It was maybe the last time I was going to make a film. So I went all in and I thought, well, I have to have a budget for film festivals and such. And my film was selected to a couple of film festivals, including one. There's the Sunscreen Film Festival, which is the biggest independent film festival in Florida, in the region of Tampa in St. Petersburg. So, you know, there was no Bitcoiners at all. I went to the festival. I was there. There was a screening of my film. There was a Q&A afterwards that went on forever because everyone just wanted to understand Bitcoin a bit better, you know, because no one knew it. And that was great because they really showed that if it's interesting and presented the right way, as professional as possible, then there's an audience beyond Bitcoiners. Now, Bitcoiners, sure, it's the kind of community that just absorbs so much content whenever there's something new, like, you know, you have to watch it, you have to know it. So it gives this, you know, base audience that, you know, is going to be there. The only tricky part is how do you build a story and market it in a way that it can go beyond that. But that's, that's why quality is all that matters.
Yeah, you know, the reason I'm asking is because I want you. I mean, I really want you to be successful and to be impactful, to be effective. And I think it's a lot of multifactorial elements, you know, playing in this. It's because I love your approach, and from my perspective, you're just amazing. You know, from your educational, rational, logical, and let's say, you know, intellectual approach, you know. But I'm just trying always to put myself into the shoes of other people, you know, who don't have the patience or the time, or maybe the pain point hasn't been reached. But I think because you said in the beginning, you know, we are at the turning point or something like that, or a tipping point. So maybe everything is just culminating together. And by the time you will release your next great resale film, sorry, what was it called again? Not the rise
Well,
of
the
Bitcoin,
fight for the US dollar,
the fight for the US dollar. By that time, I'm hoping, and I'm very pretty, let's say, convinced that by that time, the pain point of, let's say, of a critical mass of people will be reached. And then, people will open up. So you will reach them not only on intellectual, mental, whatever, educational and very knowledge level and, connecting the dots, because it takes a lot, of intellectual processing, I think. That's why, I love the way you do it, because you don't mention, as you said, until the middle of the movie or the film Bitcoin. It's all about, it's like, Safed Anamuz with his book, there's a Bitcoin standard, his standard book, like, it's like half or even three quarters of the book is hardly any mention of Bitcoin, right? So once people understand, like, aha, this is the pain point, these are the root causes, these are the connections I have to connect, these are the dots I have to connect and stuff like that, and then I think people open up, and then they can absorb, and then they, and then eventually at the end, I mean, I don't know how you're gonna do this at the end of the movie, but like to trigger them, to inspire them, to somehow move them, motivate them to take action, because that's human action, also, like in Austrian economics, like.
So I don't know if maybe you watched it's a short film on YouTube. It's called Bitcoin is Generational Wealth. So
yeah.
It's I think it's 16 minutes, but it's very inspiring as to the long term benefits that a world with Bitcoin could look like. And that's an inspiration that I have for this, the ending part of it, because once you show them, okay, what the US has done historically, what other powers have done historically in the same kind of way, which is controlling, financial markets and the monetary system as far as they could beyond their own territory, then explain what's happening today with Bitcoin. After that, explain, Bitcoin is freedom and people shouldn't be enemies of Bitcoin because, I mean, they're the enemies of freedom. And then there has to be an opening as to, it has to be hopeful, because if the whole theme is, I think it's quite negative, talking about just what exposing what's happening in the world and how certain people in power are taking control. It's heavy. It's very heavy. And so, that's not what Bitcoin is about, right? Bitcoin is about the opposite of that. That's literally why it was created. Now, of course, we have to be able to explain the whole story to people so that they understand that Bitcoin was created for that purpose, right? Because when people think about Bitcoin, they think about, oh, that's just like a get-rich scheme, which it isn't. And that's a big detachment that people have to make. It's about freedom money. It's about controlling your own funds and not having them disappear because of inflation or because someone decides to take control over your own money. Like, so it's there has to be this hopeful part of it, because this is what Bitcoin is about, I think. The thing is that you have to be able to, in order to pass this message, you need to be able to tap into the individual emotions of the viewer, so that they can understand the impact of it, and the message that you have will just hit them in the face. And in fact, if I can add, there's the director of the film Bitcoin is Generational Wealth, that is executive producer for my project. So if I try and build that story, I'm definitely gonna make it, because I'm gonna have his his backing as well. And and also one last point regarding this, when we're talking about spreading this to beyond the Bitcoin world or the freedom world. So this guy, Matt Hornick, joining as executive producer, he has a film production company, and he is joining the project with his company, meaning he had to convince his partners that are not Bitcoiners to join into that project, right? So that's, that's the small kind of trickle down effects, the ripple effects maybe of how the non-Bitcoin things, the Bitcoin world can spread into the non-Bitcoin world.
Yeah. And they must have seen, the potential or whatever the effect or the value, maybe even the values that you share, whatever the
community. Yeah. I mean, in the end, what they're backing is the hard work that I managed to put before that, right? Of course.
I see. Okay. I was always thinking, because you said film festivals, because I think it has an effect somehow. You know, it does something with the audience, with the branding, with there's also this Sundance Film Festival, I think. Isn't it from Robert Redford? People can even, submit all kinds of independent movies, documentaries. So that would be great. I think you would have a great chance. I mean, that's my opinion, but
Yeah, that's the objective, to just do the best quality film possible. And sorry,
that's
to
okay.
make the best quality film possible, and then spread it as far as possible. And the best way to do that is through film festivals, because film festivals allow to find distributors. So and this way, it can be put on other platforms, because it's great that I can have this amount of views on YouTube, but it has to go beyond that. It's the end goal is to be able to have the film on Netflix or on the big streamers, because whenever such documentaries come out on these platforms, they're watched instantly. I mean, Netflix made documentaries cool again, right? And it's the kind of thing, if presented properly, is going to be a success on that platform too. Yeah, and it allows to reach other people that don't necessarily research Bitcoin. Yeah? It'll just be in their face, and they'll watch it. So it's important to be able to do the top quality, but for that, we need money, and that's what efforts I'm putting in right now to try and raise the funds for that.
And I'm hoping, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of people would contribute to that, as you are probably, doing this through the Geiser, is that called Geiser Fund? Is that what it is?
Geiser, yeah.
Want to talk about this a little bit, the Geiser Fund?
Yeah, sure. So it's I think really cool. I mean, you know the concept of Kickstarter and Indiegogo. So they're doing the same thing, but it's only on Bitcoin. And so all the contributions are Bitcoin based in sats, and you can either donate through the Lightning Network, through or on chain. It allows for people to, I mean, one person did a 1 sat contribution, for example, yeah, which, I mean, first off, I mean, there's 2 points to that. First off, it's crazy that you can do 1 sat transfer. Like,
That's amazing, huh?
I mean, it's only possible with Bitcoin, right? Like, I find it amazing, because it's what? It's like 1/4,000th of a dollar. Yeah, it's nothing. Yeah, very, very cool. And on top of that, it allows for a person that just wants to, because there's multiple KPIs when you're raising money. There's either number one, the amount that you're actually raising, or number two, the amount of people that contributed. Now, I want to try and focus mostly on the second point, the amount of contributors. Yeah. So giving 1 sat is the equivalent of giving zero, but it's an important KPI to show that there's more people backing it. If we're able to have 10,000 people backing it, then it really shows that it's worth it, because the budget to make, I mean, making films is very expensive, yeah, and especially when it involves traveling, when it involves animations, the proper music, maybe a star that can do the right voice, and so on. And so the budget, we're at around $400,000 that we're trying to raise. I'm pretty sure
That's
we're not going
peanuts, and
to be
that's, and you know, in the film business, that's peanuts, actually,
and
right?
that's peanuts. Yes,
It's
of
really
course,
like
that's
lowest budget.
that's
I
yeah
mean,
yeah yeah that's
if you
very
really
low
want
budget.
to do a proper, professional, effective film or movie, it's just, even if it's a small scale, it takes a lot of logistics, resources,
Yeah, and a lot of professionals that can really, because it's only pros that can take this to the pro level, and these pros, I mean, you have to pay them. And all the people that are going to be involved in the project, they're all Bitcoiners, and they all just want to be part of it. They're some of the people that reached out to me after my first film, and I mean, they're either doing it pro bono or almost half their normal pay, and like they just want to be involved in a Bitcoin project, which is awesome. I mean, they really like the story that I'm trying to put forward. They like the way I'm building this community, and for them it's motivating, and it's more important than just earning their money. This they can build their regular clients for that. So yeah, and so Geyser is the right way to have this proof of community, you know, be able to demonstrate, look, there's so many people that want this film to happen. We already know we have this amount of viewers. There's a clear interest, you know, like, and we're, if we're capable of having it being one of the biggest projects on Geyser, then, you know, it speaks so much to Bitcoiners that could be the ones to potentially fund that. You know, some private investors, and that would just give bigger amounts, you know. So, and they would, of course, do it mostly through, an investment, you know, so business model, and with the hopes of maybe if there is the right traction and distribution, getting some profits out of it. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of, you know, two areas of the fundraising. There's the Geyser campaign on one side, which is the community. And then there's the investor, individual investors that I'm trying to also reach out to.
Yeah. And yeah, maybe we can discuss this maybe privately, but I just want to maybe connect you with some people. I know my best friend, she's now, you know, in Austria, and she's very well connected, you know, to all kinds of producers and even from Hollywood, but, you know, a lot of people that went away from Hollywood to do their own thing. Right. So I'm thinking maybe these people would be willing, not because of whatever monetary reasons or, you know, profitability reasons, but really I'm thinking of people who would do it out of, you know, because of the vision, because of the mission, because of the ethical reasons, you know, the you know.
I mean, if ever, you know, there's any contact that can help, that's...
Definitely, yeah. I really want you to make this more effective, and because I think... you know, you're doing really God's work, you know. I mean, this is a lot of work. I mean, I've spent some time, I even played in a small movie, and I know, you know, how these things work in the background, and it takes a lot of resource, a lot of time, a lot of, you know, energy. So, you know, whatever, you know, whether it's me or anybody else, I think, if people can contribute in whatever shape or form, whether it be monetary or financial or, you know, networking connections or any kind of, you know, technical expertise. So you mentioned, because, you know, I know you've been going, you know, a lot of rabbit holes up here. Mm-hmm. And now that you've done, you know, you've already accomplished, you know, this first part, you know, the rise of Bitcoin, and I know you've talked to Samson, and you and it seems like you've stumbled upon some things that that might not be, at least not mainstream, you know, not really generally not, you know, knowledgeable about. Is there, like, when you mentioned Samson, you know, talking to you, how would it be El Salvador or other Central American countries being suppressed, or maybe even, you know, being put under pressure, let's just say, intimidated or something like that? Was that something, like, is that a factor, an aspect that you can talk about? Like, is that something you could also elaborate in this next movie or film?
Yeah, so that's the point. That's what I want to do for the next film. Right, if you want, I can share one story with the person I had a call with. He's from El Salvador. I had a call with him a few weeks ago, because what I'm doing now, you know, is reaching out and trying to find all of these stories, right? Because that's what we need, you know. Of course, I'm going to go around, interview people, and I already have some people lined up that can share a lot of these, you know, topics. In the process of, you know, creating this community and getting people on board, I have a team of researchers that, you know, are looking for information around these topics, and we want to produce articles that we can share on our platform. This way, it allows us to build our own research, you know, library, and it allows us to share this for the community. And there's a reason to follow it, you know, like not only contributing, but also just being there and following the topic as we move forward. So I'm reaching out to a bunch of people, and there's a pretty interesting story that we still need to study a bit more. So I can only give you the, you know, the beginnings. We'll have an entire article around that. This person was telling me how he has always worked in fintech in El Salvador. And when the Bitcoin law was passed, I'm in fintech, I should transition to Bitcoin because that's what's going to come to the country, you know? So that's what he did. He has a great network, and he set up his company. And after setting up his company, well, he had to create a bank account. And it was impossible for him to create a bank account in El Salvador because every single bank was rejecting it because he was a Bitcoin company, right? So Bitcoin is legal tender and it, you know, we're supposed to bring business and so on, but the banks were not accepting it because it was too much risk, you know, this Bitcoin thing, right? And he only managed to open a bank account through one of the, you know, government-backed banks that exist there. And it took him 3 months to do it, even through that government-backed bank, right? So forever. But he managed because, you know, the government was backing it. They said Bitcoin is legal. Then I mean, it's, you know, the fact that he's a Bitcoin company is not good enough an argument to block it, right? And so what's happening is that there, it's not necessarily a direct blocking from the US, you know, that is trying to defend the US dollar. It's rather the established banks from the world and the organizations, international organizations that they have that are setting their rules. Now, of course, you know, who manages these banks? They're very close with all the top governments and so on, sure, right? But what happens is that they have different groups that they want to belong to, because it allows them to more easily do international transactions, get in, you know, international funding, investment, all these things. And they have to follow certain rules or they're kicked out of this this, you know, this group of banks, in which case they lose their business, in fact, right? They're limited to only what's happening in their country, and that's just not good enough. So it can be blocked at such a high level that it's even hard to understand who's doing it. And that's part of the things that we want to investigate. You know, we want to take a look at, okay, so what are all the different banking organizations? Which ones work in which region? Have they put some new rules when it comes to Bitcoin and crypto in general? But, you know, of course, we focus on Bitcoin. And when did these rules appear? And, you know, just doing a deep dive into how the established bank network of the world are themselves putting wheels in the, sorry, sticks in the wheel, yeah, of Bitcoin to just lower the adoption. So I think that's, you know, the kind of interesting stories that will come out of all of this, because it doesn't have to be directly the US government that is taking action. Yeah? What Samson Mao described to me was that when he was exiting a meeting with you know, someone from the government, whether it was in Guatemala, Honduras, or El Salvador, there was pretty much at each time someone from intelligence agency from the US that was there waiting at the door for when the meeting was over. And it would be very interesting to be able, you know, to get in touch with one of these people, like basically understand, like, what are they trying to reach there? Are they just trying to understand what's happening? And what do their bosses think? You know, what's the goal behind it? And there's a lot of, yeah, I think deep research to be done with that. And we're just starting now. In fact, we just started last week with the Geyser campaign that started. We got together as a team and we're like, okay, we got to produce content. It's time to like get going. We're in pre-production phase. So, you know, more to come on that. We're
Wow, it
starting
is really very
to.
exciting. Yeah. And you know, this is exactly what you're talking about. This is exactly what's missing. In this is the lack of knowledge or the lack of comprehension, what's really going on behind the scenes. Like connecting the dots. I think if you can accomplish this, like giving people, you know, even just the layman or the average person, a bigger picture, a comprehensive picture, you know, a picture where people can finally, for the first time, maybe even in their lifetime, connect the dots and understand the root causes. I mean, this is something really you don't, you know, you don't learn that in school. Not to mention, you know, all these brainwashing universities or any other academic institutions or anything. It's just you need to do a lot of digging, a lot of researching. It takes a lot of, heart, you know, sweat and blood, or what do you call it? So it takes a lot of time and energy to and really willingness and openness and open-mindedness to absorb this and then process it and then eventually come to the conclusion there is no other solution. This is a one shot we have, and that's Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I tried to, I did gather some people together like a year ago. We had a group even on Telegram with lots of people, like Daniel Prince, a lot of, Bitcoiners, one of them was, I know, Knut Swalholm, there were lots of them. And I tried like to, just to, as a sort of a brainstorming or a conceptual round, like to get people to brainstorm. And they've eventually, Knut Swalholm did something with Joni Appelberg, he did those animations. Maybe you know this guy from Sweden. He does this like short, really great Bitcoin anime. But I was thinking really more of a mixed genre between play movie and documentary, just for the purpose of picking up, or what do you call it, like to inspire, to wake up the average person out there, to the average people, outside the echo chamber of libertarians, Bitcoiners, or what have you, freedom seekers, average people who are working hard from 9 to 5 and have no time to research, they just too indoctrinated by mainstream media. And this is the systemic problem we have, whether we're talking about the monetary system or this whole COVID CO2 hoax or climate hoax, you know what I mean, where I'm going with this. But I think it's an art, and I think I consider you as an artist, you as a creator, maybe on a different level, on a very when it's you, because you're processing and you're communicating, you're gathering and processing information, knowledge, and dots, and I think it's really a craftsmanship. It's an art. And I think, all these artists like you have a, and I wish more people like you would take upon their social responsibility. I think it's a social responsibility to do these kind of things, not just for the sake of doing art, but really for the sake of having an effect on our lives, on our civilization, our future, and our children, on this whole fucked up criminal system we are in. I mean, it's still an understatement if I say criminal sometimes, I have the feeling, but because once you go really deep into all these rabbit holes, you know how fucked up and criminal this whole, matrix is. But people, we need to put on the silk gloves, and I know this is the right approach you're taking. You're taking it very slowly, rationally, logically. You're putting off silk gloves and just very gently touching them, like this is the reality, okay? Yeah. And you got to deal with it. And I think it's a challenge. I just wanted to say, I think it's an admirable challenge you're taking upon yourself. And I'm hoping really that you're gonna have a really effect on people, outside of our echo chambers,
Yeah, that's the goal. And that, as you say, that's the challenging part, because with all of these topics, you're so close to being flagged as a conspiracy theorist. And, it's, that's horrible. That's the worst kind of, because for many, this is like, once they think you're a conspiracy theorist, they're just going to say that as an argument, and they're going to stop listening to what you're saying. And I mean, I get it. Sure. I don't think that's the right approach, to conversations or to educating yourself, but I understand that people can block themselves like that. And that's why you have to be able to build the story in a way that doesn't put you in that box, right? Because you get censored, no one wants to watch it, and your reputation takes a hit to do anything outside of the community you're in. So it's a thin line, and you have to be able to balance it. And that's why writing something like that is complicated. And that's why I need to rely on a bunch of people behind it. Because, for my first film, I think it was easier. It's just presenting hard data that is really out there. When it comes to the more investigative journalism that is going to take place for this second project, then you can't do this alone. It's impossible. First off, you may get locked into your own biases, and also there's just too much information out there. So so the way we're actually planning to do it is there's so 5 writers, including me, right now we're all kind of just doing research on whatever kind of topics we find interesting around that, and eventually we'll just move on to each person writes a part of the story for a particular theme that we know we want to cover in the film, and then together we review it, and then all together, the 5 of us, we just put it in the right order, whatever seems the most chronological to us. So we need a lot of info for all of that. So we're working on this early, and we want to invite the community as much as possible for that. I mean, on our blog that we started, so just last week, we're going to post articles pretty much every week. I have a contact in Bitcoin Magazine too, and we're going to send them every week, and they're going to publish most of them if we give the right value to it. The first one is coming out next week, and which is pretty much the one from the video. It's the same thing. Get other people to, if they want to do research about this kind of topic because they find it great, they can just send it to us and we will post it on our blog and it'll be part of our library, you know, the kind of content that we're going to then be able to use to build the whole story, right? So we started a Telegram group, actually. I saw you joined it, where the goal of it is to share information there, anyone can learn, of course, what kind of things we're looking at, the articles we're looking at, and so on, and maybe also engage into a deeper conversation and have the whole community share any other resources they could find, you know, so that we know we can add it to our list, we'll check it out, and it'll be part of our research. So that's, just a way to really invite the community and be able to, you know, narrow down the information, but by having as much information as possible processed by the whole community.
That's great. That's a fantastic approach. And I love it, you know, when the community can involve themselves and with it be brainstorming or bring in ideas or maybe, you know, bring in some facets or aspects. And, you know, as I just told you about this group that we had, and for me personally, it was important. Like, I was like, okay, when we talk about society or civilization or, you know, humanity or people outside, you know, our echo chambers, they just can't even imagine. They can't even fathom like what it could be. We can't. When I read for the first time, you know, Safed Anamoul's book, The Bitcoin Standard, and he talked about this La Belle Epoque, right? I think it's French, you know, the time when it was like a gold standard, whatever, like hard money, you know, I was like, could we even imagine, you know, I mean, first of all, how much have we lost, at least within the last 100 years, not only monetary, financially and existentially, but also technological wise, prosperity, abundance, which Jeff Booth also talks about. I mean, I hope that Jeff Booth is going to be one of your guests who's going to speak on that. And I think there's a lot, you know, a lot of people out there who could like really bring in a very succinct picture of what a Bitcoinized, hyper-Bitcoinized world, you know, Samson Mao, you know, from Gen 3 is working for the acceleration of hyper-Bitcoinization. And I'm always, you know, in the back of my brain, I'm like, can people even imagine what life, what society, what the structural things can look like in our world? We can't, and I can't even, you know, I mean, I have a lot of imagination. I know there's a lot of technologies, there's a lot of abundance, prosperity, there's a lot of comfort we could get within a hyper Bitcoinized world. I can't even imagine what El Salvador could look like under Bukele, and you know, with a total legal tender thing in 10 and 20 years. But is that like an aspect you're thinking maybe about, like giving them at least just a few minutes, a glimpse of not like sci-fi or, you know, utopian stuff, but I'm like, maybe a realistic approach, like what could the day-to-day life for an average person look like in a hyper-Bitcoinized world? Because isn't that what we're actually striving for?
Yeah, so, and for sure, right? That's part of, you know, when I was mentioning an opening similar to Bitcoin is generational wealth, because it's, again, that's the hopeful parts, and it shows the, so I think one of the more important parts to try and get through, because basically we're talking about Bitcoin culture, because that's what it is. We don't know what it could be, but we put information together that makes us believe in a potential future, right? And we as Bitcoiners, we like, you know, we agree on these ideas. Maybe not all of them, because there's also some, you know, kind of crazy stuff in the Bitcoin world. But you know, the one that I think matters the most is this long-term kind of perspective. And I think this is what you can very easily transfer to people. It's a very easy concept to understand, and it's fairly easy to compare our short-term thinking today, explain where it comes from and how a lot of it comes from our money, and say that, well, Bitcoin doesn't work like that, and it could allow for long-term thinking in every aspect of our society, right? And then it opens up to, well, what aspects of our society? Well, energy, you know, the right diet, the right, you know, way of producing agriculture, all these things, you know, the avoiding these huge groups of like, you know, food companies, I forgot what's the name of their industry, you know, and getting back to the real, what it means to be a human being, you know. I think that's the kind of opening that is needed, because especially, you know, in a world where now, like, the top, like, topics are metaverse, like, bullshit, and, like, I mean, you know, we have to get back to the basics, and I think it's important to be able to explain to people that, you know, we understand that, because of inflation, everything is super expensive. You can't hope to buy land, so you're going to buy some land in the metaverse. But that's not what it means to be a human being.
Yeah. No, it's getting really grotesque and bizarre. This whole, you know, metaverse, whatever it's called, it's mind-boggling. This whole culture that's been it's almost like, yeah, it's an artificial culture that's been propagated and you know. Of course, financed in the background, it's with whatever intentional agendas behind it, with all this, you know, woke culture, whatever we want to call it, or all this, you know, energy, like CO2 agenda behind it, you know, I mean, but not for them, but for us, sort of. So, yeah, so. You know, I mean, most people think it's for the first time, like, understanding what's been stolen from us, like, it's still being systematically stolen from us, time, energy, monetary value, or economics, or existences, or health, or technology, you know, on every level we can think of. And you know, I know this is, I have to sometimes, I talk about this a lot in my podcast, like, what kind of other technologies could, you know, be developed or is already developed, but could be released and eventually, you know, help society, you know, have a more comfortable life, where people have more time to do the things that they really love, you know. So, you know, Jeff Booth also talks about, like, we eventually going to live in a world where people are going to maybe live, you know, work 10, 15 hours a week, but voluntarily, because they do it out of passion, because they really love to contribute back to society. And I think we need to, I don't need to tell you, there's billions of people out there who have a job, who hate their jobs, who hate their jobs. And I know personally people, you know, who make good money, even, you know, in fiat terms, but they just hate their jobs. So what kind of, you know, life is this? So I think on every level we can think of, you know, whether it be mentally, psychologically, emotionally, structurally, technologically, everything will change. And I think this is something that cannot be, you know, emphasized enough.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, I'm very curious, and I tried to put some thought into this, you know, I'm just not technical enough, I think, but it's what kind of, so I think a lot of the technologies that could potentially, you know, come to be created, that could solve a lot of the problems we have, I think that, you know, a lot of it could be backed by Bitcoin in some way. And, like, I can even give you an example from a conversation I had earlier with my girlfriend. So we're talking about TikTok, and apparently somewhat recently TikTok changed their algorithm for whatever reason, and there's profiles that have hundreds of thousands of followers, not sure what they do, right? But, you know, when you have this size of a profile, you base your business decisions on that, right? There's a way it works, there's a certain reach that you have, and your business works thanks to that. All of a sudden, some of these profiles, they're getting, you know, 300 views after a few hours, which is nothing. I mean, it has nothing to do with how their profiles used to work, right? And that's only based on the fact that TikTok decided to change the algorithm, you know? And that's one of the factors that you can't change in Bitcoin, you know? You can't just, like, I mean, the amount of effort that is needed to change the Bitcoin protocol and, you know, make sure that it works differently is huge, right? Can't this somehow be applied elsewhere thanks to the Bitcoin technology? Like, you know, that's the kind of idea that I think eventually is going to come, and it's going to be made so much easier thanks to the Lightning Network and other, layer two networks of the sort. But it's interesting thoughts. That's for sure. The impact that there could be thanks to Bitcoin. I think you're on mute.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Pierre, when it comes to nation state Bitcoin adoption, which is the mission of Gen3 and Samson Mao, what do you think? I mean, is that like would that be part of the movie too? Like, are you planning, or do you is that some idea like maybe in your head, like to talk to people who want to take the initiative, who might be decision makers or not, who might have some influence in specific countries? Would it be Peru or, I don't know, some other Central American countries or smaller countries, bigger countries? Is that something that you want to weave into the movie, or is that,
No, that's right. So, I'm mostly going to focus on Central America, but not only, right? So Central America, because I mean, obviously, El Salvador has adopted Bitcoin as legal tender. Honduras, we see that they have like a Prospera, this individual like a independent city that wants to be a Bitcoin city. There's this town, news from a couple of weeks ago that in order to attract tourism, they're starting to accept Bitcoin. Like, so it's happening there basically. And it's a lot inspired by, the success that El Salvador has had since the Bitcoin adoption. I guess there's different KPIs you can take a look at there, but I mean, the tourism in particular, which is what they're trying to, to reach there. And of course, El Salvador is starting it, and given the influence of the president, and the objective that he has of a certain reunification of Central America so that they become better business partners in general, I think this is where it's happening, and that's where I want to focus. And I don't want to only focus on El Salvador, but I want to also interview people from Honduras, from Guatemala, and as many as I can, in fact, including from Mexico. This would be Indira Kempis and hopefully Ricardo Salinas. These are people that Samson Mao told me he can he can reach out to and have them join the project, likely, of course, maybe, right? And Samson Mao himself will be there to be able to explain his vision, his experience spreading all of this, and including the troubles that he may be facing personally or through the business, and or what he's seen others struggle with. And I also have, in order to open this even further, going down more south to Argentina, there is Carlos Maslatón. He used to be a politician in the years 2000, and is now a Bitcoiner, and he kind of just spreads the word about Bitcoin, and he is so confirmed for the documentary, and he has a lot of these stories, and he was very excited with the way I was presenting the project and the kind of stories that I'm looking for. He was excited to be able to share these kind of things, even saying that it would go beyond the politically correct. So, I mean, for him to say this, it means he was quite excited with the story, which is great because that's the content I'm looking for. I told him, "Oh, look, I'll have some questions because, of course, I want this to go a certain direction, but I'll also have a lot of open-ended questions where you can just go and tell whatever story you want to tell." And he said, "Great." So, that's just how I'm trying to build my network is through reaching out to different people that were involved, are involved, have some experience there, and can just share their view. And it's great to be able to also include people that are Bitcoiners, because they can really share this perspective. But it would be great to also involve people that are, well, the opposite, and that are part of these actors that are trying to block it or slow down that adoption, because it has to be a balanced conversation, especially that,
Holistic, yeah. But, yeah.
yeah, and especially that, what we want to do is understand their arguments and then debunk them and show, well, that's actually not true, and but I say it with such confidence because I spent a lot of time researching it and so on, right? So that's, my opinion speaking. Now, in the film, I have to be able to pass the same message, but only based on the actual facts that were found. And this will be quite a challenge, and I think a good way to learn a lot and develop, you know, my way of thinking about a lot of things as well.
And you're right, you know, I mean, also when I talk to Samson, I think he says, of course, you know, it's important to go to Bitcoin conferences and, you know, Bitcoin communities and all these events where a bunch of Bitcoiners are. But I think for him, also, it's important to have contrarian opinions, like really people like this is the only way you can interact and have, you know, whether it be panel discussions or panel discussions, I think are one of the best, because you have, like, you know, totally contrarian people with totally different understanding of the reality or values or whatever, or thoughts or I don't know, the way they explain things. And I think it's always good to have a contrarian a point of view or perspective, then you can somehow dissect it and then and come to a hopefully, you know, good conclusion of all. We are almost at the end. Pierre, is there anything which we should have mentioned, anything you want to emphasize or
I can just plug a bit more the fact that, you know, in order for this to work, we need the community, you know, and that's the effort that I'm doing now. It's just be able to market this as much as possible, because I think it's a great, like a great mission, but I think it's hard to think of a better story to tell that Bitcoiners would be able to back, because we've already heard so much of the other stuff, including what I put in my first film. You know, we've heard it through so many different means, whether it's podcasts, I mean, whatever it is. I think here we have the chance of really exposing some of these, inequalities that exist and present them while advertising Bitcoin. And the best is if we do it all together, you know? So whether you can contribute through Geyser, or if someone wants to be an individual investor in the project and join the project directly as executive producer or something, then just reach out. I mean, you're more than welcome. We're looking for help, and anyone can contribute, even if it's just research or anything, just reach out to us. You can do that either on Twitter, so myself, Pierre Corbin, or you can find the page of The Great Reset Films on the website, thegreatresetfilm.com. And there's all our contacts there.
Well, it was a great, fascinating conversation, Pierre. Really want to wish you all the best, and we're going to stay in touch, definitely. I'll contact you sometime soon in the next several weeks. But let's just stay in touch, and maybe even, you know, maybe in the near future, I'm thinking of a panel discussion with you together, which might also, you know, somehow boost the effect of the branding or the promotion of your film. So
I think we're just going to move on with the research. So in a few weeks from now, I'll have even better stories to tell.
Oh, Pierre, it was really, you did a lot of research. I really enjoyed the first part, the rise of Bitcoin. And I can't wait really to, are you planning to do a separate succinct, like teaser, a trailer for eventually, like a 3 minute or 5 minute teaser, a trailer for the fight for the US dollar, I mean the next movie?
Yeah, but I think this will be when we're already in the production process.
Okay, gotcha.
I think for now it's better to just gather this information and present it so that people just follow it, you know, and understand what's actually happening, and the more we can share the better. But the trailer will come, of course.
Amazing. Well, I can't wait to see that. Pierre Corbin, do I pronounce your name correctly, Corbin or Corbin?
So in French it's Corbin, so yeah, you are pronouncing it properly. But you know, you can say it however you want.
Awesome, Pierre. Okay, well, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon. Okay,
take care. Yeah, thank you. Take care. Okay. Thank you very much.
Ciao. Bye. Well, that was a amazing conversation. Anyway, with Pierre Corbin, check out his great reset. I'm going to put all the links in the show notes. Like, subscribe, follow him on Twitter, on YouTube. support him through Geyser, or in any shape or form, would it be, you know, technical expertise, connections, networking? I think this man, Pierre Corbin, should be promoted, should be supported in any shape or form. There's, of course, other people who have also done some movies and films, documentaries, great documentaries. But I think this could be really the litmus test, a challenge where the tipping point is coming to a culminating point where, you know, the pain point has reached, within a lot of people, on a monetary, economical, existential, structural level, emotional level. And I think this film can really reach maybe not, you know, hundreds of millions, but at least, you know, tens of millions of people eventually. And please share this video. Make sure you if you want to just dip, if you have never had anything to do with Bitcoin, download yourself a mobile wallet just for the start of it, or if you're doing it for someone else, download Moon Wallet. It's the easiest, most user-friendly mobile wallet, Bitcoin wallet. It's got on-chain and Lightning. It's easy, it's self-explanatory, and voila, you just send a few sats and that's it, without any intermediaries, without any bureaucracy, without any headache. And that's how you, I guess, inspire and educate also people. Like this is how easy it is, right? You can even send one sat, like 100 millionth of a Bitcoin. So you don't need a whole Bitcoin, right? So this is something that a lot of people don't know. So follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, whatever, on YouTube. Give me a like if you liked it. Give me a feedback, a comment. And eventually and give me some suggestions if you want to have more of these interviews or panel discussions. Suggest some names and I can try to coordinate a panel discussion for next time. Well, thank you so much again. My name is Kevan Davani of the Kevan Davani Connection Show, and Bitcoin is the evolution. I'll see you soon. Bye.